Hello, and welcome to the Misadventures in Marketing podcast presented by the American Marketing Association San Francisco chapter. I'm Steve Haney, a fractional go-to-market executive in Silicon Valley.
And I'm Peter Farrago, a high-tech marketing executive in the Bay Area. Each week, Steve and I come together to talk about all things in AI marketing.
We share our own experiences running marketing teams with a special focus on technology startups. We talk about our successes and our failures, what worked and what failed. Every once in a while, we also invite our CMO friends and other marketing colleagues onto the show, and hopefully we'll impart some wisdom along the way. First topic of the week, first segment is tech news, and I wanted to ask you, Peter, do you think we are in the middle of an AI investment bubble? NVIDIA just hit $5 trillion in market cap, which I think is insane. Apple passed $4 recently. I think Microsoft's been there for a while. This seems like a little frothy to me. What are your thoughts?
There is a bubble. It's not purely a bad thing, but I think the hype is outpacing reality. You know, hype is like inflated valuations. You know, look at OpenAI and Anthropic and their valuations, right? I don't know if they really have that strong of a moat. There's a lot of corporate theater. Everybody's saying we have AI. Here's AI. They're bolting on AI. Their homepage says AI. There's definitely a lot of money flowing in and probably inflating values. Well, in fact, you know, the war for talent between, say, Meta and Apple just to pay, you know, certain people with AI and machine learning backgrounds, right? So there's that. On the other side, you do have real productivity gains. The adoption of things like AI coding assistants is like at 90%. Like white collar type, you know, marketer stuff, similar. So people are definitely getting efficiency. You know, you can do a lot better research, you can create content faster. So there's real value compared to, say, the dot-com boom. And so I don't think there'll be a dot-bomb equivalent, but there has to be some correction.
Correction, yeah. So I think marketers right now, if they're wise, they need to batten down the hatches a little. That's certainly what I would be doing and preparing for this correction, this just gut feeling, you know, my spidey sense is going off. I can't imagine that all this value is real. That being said, like you, I love these tools. I'm using them more and more every day on in every possible way, not only in my daily work with my clients, but charities I work with, things at my kids' school that I'm helping out, you know, startups I'm advising. I use it everywhere. And it's great. They're great tools, and I'm paying for them, right? I'm actually handing over cash because they're that valuable to me. Every week, Peter and I just, you know, want to talk about all the cool AI tools we've discovered and that we're using. Just very quick tips and tricks and things that are making our lives as marketers that much easier. I'm a big fan of Google's Notebook LM. I can't figure out what quite makes it so different than just using a chat bot and loading files into the chat. But the new thing that they've added that I certainly didn't see until this week is that as a document you can put in the library, you can now add Google Sheets, which is a big deal. I tried that in the past. I wasn't able to do it. I do have the pro version in my subscription for my consulting business. So it's not like the super big expensive $250 a month version. So maybe that was available there. But just having, you know, just rows and rows and columns of data as part of that, what's essentially an agentic AI around a certain topic, and being able to share that notebook it's a huge big deal. How about you, Peter? Any cool tips and tricks that you found out recently in the tools you're using?
I'll give a universal one that a lot of people can use in any walk of life. I was going back on some very heavy editing But I use ChatGPT sometimes to just keep my language less emotional and maybe even less snarky. And so I'll say, hey, I got this comment or feedback. You know, I'm going to write back. And it could be an email, could be whatever. I'm going to write back, you know, how is this? And then it just kind of takes it and it strips out all the unnecessary stuff. It's going to sound crazy, but everything you put in writing is in writing. Don't leave a trail of things you wish you didn't say. And I'm finding ChatGPT or whatever you use is obviously super objective. So it's sometimes worth, when you're a little bit charged up about something, to just put it through and see the answer it gives you. It's good hygiene for your career.
Why don't we dive into this week's topic, because it's apropos of what you were just talking about, and that is content marketing and producing content to win the AI wars going on out there and the huge amount of what a lot of people call AI slop flooding the internet and trying to be heard. So, you know, marketing teams trying to remain consistent in their messaging. They're using these tools to great effect. They're cranking out more content than ever. It's exploding everywhere. How are you addressing this in the work you're doing every day at your company?
It's a good question. I mean, I love content marketing because it's a great thought leadership approach. You're collectively developing your thinking as a team. It helps you with insights and arguments and being credible with customers. And I like a lot of data-driven stuff. But the truth is, it's very, very noisy and crowded out there. The bar to create content has really gone down. So content is so cheap to create now. But as a result, trust got a lot more expensive. So, you know, with all these look-alike, you know, AI takes out there and stuff, it's just extremely hard. So I think it's really coming back to quality over quantity. And I say this not in a way to just kind of throw out a tried and true phrase. We really just had this conversation last week. We've been trying blogging for the last, you know, 6 months. Both the CEO and I are blogging. It's high quality stuff. At least I am using a hybrid approach with AI to generate the content, and I'm doing a ton of human curation. I might start with the content, you know, I start with ideas and then I maybe research it and then I develop it and then, you know, it gets looked at by my CEO because we're in a pretty technical business and I get that technical check from him, but also he's just a good, fast provider of relevant feedback. So then I'm able to take his reaction as a human and then go back through and edit it further. So I believe that I'm making really good, high quality content with AI that is kind of, you know, not the same level of stuff out there. That said, it's also still not breaking through. The CEO, on the other hand, has been writing as an expert. He has a PhD as an expert in computer science. He's been writing a Substack for a couple of years with a professor, one of our co-founders, and that's pretty human written, I can tell, because I look at it. So he's trying the other approach, and neither is really breaking through. Like, I do find some rules of thumb exist, like, especially on LinkedIn, people want to follow people. If you do more founder marketing or just thought leadership from an SME, a subject matter expert, you get more follows or more reactions than, say, if it's a company. So people putting out content is better than companies putting out content. It's still totally flooded. And I think that
I will say you're lucky that your SME is your CEO. I think we had this discussion a few weeks ago where your founders, they just have to be out there because they're the authoritative voices. And this gets back to what's Google's acronym about EAT: experience, expertise, authority, and trustworthiness. And it's vital. So, I mean, at least you've got a CEO who's open to it. Because, listen, I've worked with so many, and they want to have nothing to do with, certainly not with video. much less producing a blog post.
The chilling question I got over Slack was like, you know, hey, what do you think about our blogging strategy? Is it working? You know, and I was like, you know, because I've seen, you know, I've done it steadily for, like I said, about 6 months, post to LinkedIn, post to X, do a weekly roundup email, send that out. And it's driving some traffic to the site and all that. And it's getting engagement to an extent, but it's not really widening the audience. Mostly it's just some of our employees and maybe people we know in the community will like it. And you can just tell it, nothing's really breaking through. We're rethinking what we do and trying to be more opinionated. This is just about to start. So like we just had this discussion, but my point is like what I think would have worked in the past is not working now somehow. And we used AI to do it, but it's still not enough given the volume or the volume of content out there. It's hard out there with content, even though you know it's valuable.
Yeah. And I'm not as close to the ground on a daily basis as you are to this because you're at that stage in your company where what you can do and what you have to do, given the resources you have. I think I can make just a broader comment, but I still think that these generative AIs, you know, they're predictive in the sense that they look backwards on what they see and they regurgitate to a certain extent. And that can be helpful, but you still need that spark of imagination, which only humans can provide, meaning the unique angle, the unique insight, the unique understanding. And the AI is kind of like this intelligence that can look at that and based on past experience, which I'm putting here in air quotes for our audio listeners, help refine that, define that, provide input, but you still need, again, what the stuff that Google is calling E, you know, that authenticity, that originality, that spark. And obviously this is what, I mean, certainly our team and the research they pulled up for us and, you know, everything we're looking at, that's how marketers are using it now, right? They're still leaning on the subject matter experts to bring life to this stuff. But the thing is, you know, all of that kind of refinement and insights from the AIs and everything it adds, this is like the classic automation insight or thing that, you know, humankind makes these tools. It takes away all the drudge work. Well, when you do that, that means that unique human thing that you can do, you know, the imagination, the spark, the unexpected, that means you can do that a lot more. Because you got the AI doing all this drudge work of filling in the gaps for you. Therefore, we've got, I don't want to call it AI slop, but a lot of AI content generated flooding the zone. And it just gets back to the issue, really, of not so much the production, because the production can still be pretty good. I mean, I've seen the stuff. I'm not even in the segment. I know nothing about the segment you're in, but I find it interesting and good. And readable and, you know, engaging. How do you get it out there? How do you get it through?
Yeah. I mean, with each piece, I start with an interesting tension or challenge or issue. A lot of it is how is AI changing how we work applied to my category. But it's a lot of that, like, what's changing, what's not changing, how should you look at it? It's well researched, it's well structured, it's got a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's got a story. It's stuff that I think is, you know, on the minds of, call it an early funnel stage type of prospect that we might be talking to. In my case, it's like an engineering leader who's like, should I be applying AI into my team's workflow? Like, how do I do that effectively? Is it a waste of time? Is it going to create problems for me? What are the economics? So I know it's all really good. I think it's just that there's so much out there that's drowning out signal. Like you were mentioning about AI looks backwards, it synthesizes, it summarizes. Also, as a person who's writing a lot with AI or like Copilot style, there's a joke going around about AI being sycophantic. And it's like, the line is like, oh, I like the way you're thinking. You know, everything you write, you could tell ChatGPT to F off. And it's like, I like the way you're thinking, you know? And it's like, stop telling me what I want to hear. And, you know, there are prompts. People want to call themselves prompt engineers, but you can say, hey, look, be brutally honest with me. Imagine you're a skeptical, in my world, engineering leader who doesn't have a lot of time and really needs you to get to the point. And this has to be technically accurate and it can't be like fluff and pumped up and exaggerated and all that. Right. So you can do all that. But as I'm getting the, hey, I like the way you're thinking, it will just go down the path you're sort of pushing it. And you need to like change the topic. So a lot of times I will just think, I need to feed it something. I'm writing a phrase of how I would think about how I'd say it. And then I put it back in front of it. And so I'm shaping the argument or the discussion. I'm trying to turn it on its head because that's the insightful part that ultimately the reader who's looking at your piece will be like, oh yeah, this is fresh thinking. This is interesting, right? I also think the other thing I'll say that's still classic, like I was doing a bunch of research over the weekend, and something that introduces a new relevant insight into the conversation is super valuable. And like an industry report, like in my world, there was a pretty broad survey or study done on like, you know, developer productivity using AI tools or something. And that was really interesting for the argument I was trying to create. Which is there's a lot of new AI code being created and how are we going to maintain it all in production? It's a big problem. It's like, there's more than ever, but now there's more to fix than ever. And so I was like, well, is that true? Is there data out there? And what I was finding was like, going back to a classic, really well-structured piece of research that had real insights and some analysis, that was really credible. And then I also noticed I went into Ahrefs, you know, my SEO kind of subscription dashboard. And I was looking at some of those, I was curious and as a marketer, and I was looking at some of those reports and they did get backlinks. Because at the end of the day, discovery on the web still comes back to backlinks, high quality backlinks. You know, each website has a domain authority, it has a reputation score, and things that more other sites that point back to your piece or your website that have high domain authority, that's what Google is looking at as the main signal. So these research reports were getting some high quality backlinks. They're adding something new and relevant to the conversation that is also objective and analytical and insightful. And it still just comes down to that.
I'm not sure we've reached quite the most mind-blowing conclusion here. This is pretty obvious. Use the generative AI tools for the Drudge work and add the human element and your content's going to stand out. But I'm not sure that's going to be good enough because everybody's going to be doing that. Right.
I think that the game has stayed the same, like meaning, you know, maybe it's not SEO like search engine optimization. Maybe it's signal engine optimization because you can be discovered on, you know, AI LLMs and stuff now too. But it's still about putting something out in the world that's supposed to get you some credibility and attention, you know, drawing potential in this, obviously consumer and business marketing, you're trying to attract the right audience to you, right? And make them aware and interested. And it's just that this is a very saturated game now. And to rise to the top, you're going to have to be better.
It's like we've only solved half the problem. You have distribution, you're out there in the world. How do you stand out? I don't know. Maybe it's more video, attacking on the video side and trying to go viral that way or provide insights, different consumption model.
You know, a hypothesis I made early in the year was for B2B, we have to win on LinkedIn. We have to try to build the audience there. And vertical video, you know, I was looking at LinkedIn as getting turned into TikTok, right? Because you have all these you have all these content creators with vertical video now. And as someone who's used LinkedIn for a long time, definitely over the last 5 to 8 years, it's become a lot more like a social network in terms of the stuff people are posting. You know, it's not professional, it's personal a lot of times. And I don't mean anything by it. I just mean, like, to me, there was a separation between what you should be putting on
Yeah.
What do you put on your resume? Right.
I mean, why are people through LinkedIn wishing me a happy birthday? That should not be allowed.
It's just they're trying to drive engagement. It's trying to drive engagement. LinkedIn's added various publishing tools over time so that that becomes your destination, because ultimately that's an advertising driven platform and they need eyeballs and conversion. Mm-hmm. So that's why. And they have a ton of data on you as a user there that's very valuable for targeting and premium targeting. So that's it. That's the whole thing. So they want you there more and they're willing to do whatever. But I did a video series of the professor, one of the AI sort of authority that's known in the field. And we were just doing little snippets where he was reacting to, you know, they're like 1 to 2 minutes of him talking about a topic and we do a bunch of them. And I was releasing them and they're not doing a ton, you know, like, again, we're a pretty niche. It's pretty niche for us. But my point is the video stuff is a different format. It's now possible on LinkedIn. It could do double duty over on Google because it's like a Google short. I was putting it in both places. It was getting picked up better on Google, I found. We did do another one. We did a higher end. What did work was we did a high end, a very high end produced video, like interview series. I mean, it was gorgeously shot. And you could really see the quality. It's like watching like a professional, you know, documentary on Netflix or something, you know? And so, and we brought in a bunch of experts, like 8 different experts. So what was happening was when I would post, you know, this snippet, but, you know, I had a video that was about a 5-minute mini doc. And then I had like 40 like hot take snippets, like little quotes from each of these folks. We would get their audience to some of their likes, right? So it was that same kind of co-marketing, partner marketing thing that was helping expand our reach a little bit. So those did better because I think of the production value, the insights, and honestly, we were drafting off a little bit of other people's audiences here and there. And that did better. I wouldn't say it broke through. A few of them broke through better than others, but that's kind of what it takes. It takes a lot of ecosystem marketing is what some people call it. I would just call it co-branding or partner. Sharing audiences, right? It's why on podcasts, normally you have a bunch of guests, right? Because each time you have a guest, you get the guest to promote to their audience. And if you do that 100 times, you touch 100 different audiences and you aggregate up your own, right?
Yeah. Well, and I, you know, I think all the research is showing that it is these short form videos that help differentiate and drive engagement over you know, other kinds of user-generated and AI-assisted generated content.
It's just that the competition, the noise is deafening, is drowned out. But I still think you have to start with a point of view, you know, not think about the keyboard. And that's exactly what we talked about. It's like the CEO said, I think we need to be more opinionated. You know, what should he talk about if we were thinking about it as a brand, a founder marketing brand? And I say that like with a lowercase b at this stage, because a lot of it's going to be trial and error and just trying different things until he finds out the intersection of what he really is interested in, likes, and what the audience cares about and what he has, honestly, credibility around, because that's the main thing. Like, people aren't going to follow you without that. So, and I think in today's age, the other overlay I'll say is being authentic and maybe even slightly vulnerable is like more acceptable. You know, having that point of view is important.
Authenticity and person, what you were calling personality, you know, the human element. Again, that's something that AI, you know, the other person producing their AI content can't necessarily compete against. Actually, I think that's kind of a brilliant way to wrap this up is, your CEO, your subject matter expert, coming to you and say, we need to be more opinionated. To me, that sounds like we need to be more human. We need to have a point of view, and we need to instill that into our content. Still doesn't always matter when the noise of the maddening crowds is around you screaming at top volume, but you have to do it. I think it's just table stakes at this point. We want to thank you, our audience, for listening. Our editors, Lorenzo Fernandez-Kopek at Peakbound Studio and Brian Douglas at the Creative Commonwealth. They make us look and sound great. our marketing maven Ian Robinson Lambert for getting the word out, Julianne Bornalis for being our consulting producer, the amazing Renita Dada for driving our market research and content calendar, and of course Thomas Moyer, president of the AMA San Francisco chapter, for presenting this podcast. Would also like to thank our sponsor Workbox for their support of this Adventures in Marketing. Bye.